It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Horrific terror massacre in Pakistan. Sierra Leone tries new ways to break the transmission rate of Ebola. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. World leaders Tuesday denounced the massacre of nearly 150 people, mostly students, at a military school in the Pakistani city Peshawar. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said no cause can justify such brutality. Nobel laureate Malala Yousafzai, herself shot by the Taliban 2 years ago, called for unity in the fight against terror.
And I call upon the international community, leaders in Pakistan, all political parties and everyone, that we should stand up together and fight against terrorism, and we should make sure that every child gets safe and quality education.
The Pakistani Taliban called Tuesday's attack an act of retaliation for the army's offensive against insurgents in the country's northwest. Sierra Leone authorities plan to conduct house-to-house searches around the capital, Freetown, looking for hidden Ebola patients. President Ernest Bai Koroma said the searches are aimed at extracting every sick person to break the chain of transmission. Britain Tuesday announced it will not seek U.S. military assistance in fighting the virus in Sierra Leone, saying it expects enormous change for the better by the end of January. Justine Greening is the U.K. International Development Secretary.
Transmission rates are already falling, but we should be absolutely clear that there is a long way to go in this battle against Ebola. As we are getting out there into the districts, you're seeing the numbers rise because we're getting a truer picture of just how bad this disease is.
Sierra Leone recently surpassed Liberia as the country with the most cases of Ebola. The country has recorded more than 8,200 cases to date, more than 2,000 deaths from the virus. This is VOA News. Uganda's army says nearly 1,000 former M23 rebels escaped from a camp just before being scheduled to be repatriated to Democratic Republic of Congo. An army spokesman said the fighters cited security fears as their reason for not returning to DRC. A number of rebel fighters ended up in Uganda last year after the Congolese army drove them from their strongholds in Congo's North Kivu province. Human Rights Watch says nearly 200 civilians in eastern DRC were massacred since October. VOA's Gabe Josler reports the violence is linked by the rights group to rebels of the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, an Islamist group that began its insurgency in Uganda in the mid-1990s.
Human Rights Watch senior researcher Ida Sawyer says the violence appears aimed primarily at spreading terror.
The attackers have come in. Sometimes they pretend to be Congolese army soldiers, and they come into the community and act like they're there to protect the civilians. And then later on, when night falls, they turn against the population and start hacking them to death.
Sawyer said Human Rights Watch could only confirm 184 people killed in attacks between October and December of this year, but said the actual number is likely significantly higher. She notes the attacks are more brutal than usually carried out by ADF, and the assailants are speaking languages not usually spoken by the group, indicating that other armed groups may also be involved. Congolese armed forces, backed by UN peacekeepers, have been battling the ADF since January and have driven the rebels from their main bases in eastern DRC. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
African leaders meeting in Senegal Tuesday urged the West to intervene to resolve the crisis in Libya, the North African country in the grips of chaos, with two rival governments and supporters battling each other, raising fears of a civil war. Meanwhile, Islamist militia Tuesday pressed their offensive against key oil terminals in eastern Libya, stepping up the battle to gain control of the facilities still held by forces loyal to an internationally recognized government. The International Monetary Fund has warned that South Africa's economy faces many challenges, including low growth, high unemployment, and budget and current accounts deficits. The IMF projects just 1.4% growth in South Africa this year to 2.1% in the new year. Ethiopia says it plans to expand industry, sugar factories, and power production. Finance Minister Sufyan Ahmed said Tuesday the economy is expanding at 9% a year and aims to be a textile hub in foreign investments as factories move from Asia seeking lower labor costs. In Ghana, the European Union says the West African country must remove so-called ghost workers from its public sector before the European bloc resumes budget support that was suspended a year ago. Ghana is trying to emerge from a fiscal crisis that has slowed growth and hurt its currency. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone authorities today begin house-to-house searches for hidden Ebola patients.
We have decided this time around, particularly in the western area where we are having spike of cases, that it is time for us to go into these communities that we think people are still harboring the sick ones.
Abdoulaye Birete is Sierra Leone government's spokesperson. Refugees living in Kenya long for peace in their home countries. There's more trouble for former Zimbabwe Vice President Joyce Mujuru. A former U.S. ambassador to South Sudan will reflect on the one-year anniversary of that country's civil war. And Tanzania's attorney general resigns over corruption allegations.
I'm not satisfied on the resignation because people would like to see the people who did not perform their duties well, who abused the office and facilitated the scandal, are taken to task.
Zito Kabwa is an opposition member of parliament in Tanzania. And does seeing yourself as a different race or age change your biases and stereotypes? Those stories plus Mark Olmai, sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Authorities in Sierra Leone will today, Wednesday, carry out house-to-house searches around the capital, Freetown, to look for hidden Ebola patients. Freetown has lately become the center of the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, reporting more than 130 new confirmed cases in the first week of December. Government spokesman Abdoulaye Birete says today's action is prompted by the failure of some citizens to heed the appeal of President Ernest Bai Koroma for people to stop harboring Ebola-affected patients.
Basically, the government has come to the realization that in as much as His Excellency the President has been going all over the country, giving an indication for the people to move out those sick people. So that is why we have decided this time around, particularly in the western area where we are having spike of cases, that it is time for us to go into these communities that we think people are still harboring the sick ones and the high number of cases. So that is why we have gotten ambulances on standby. We have contact tracers as well as surveillance officers. And, of course, we now boast of over 6 holding centers in the western area. And we are also opening the treatment center at PTS2, which is the Ebola treatment center at Hastings, so that whosoever is confirmed positive for Ebola, that person can be taken immediately into the treatment center.
Did you declare some kind of a quarantine where people are ordered to stay home? How are you going to find the people?
Well, we already did what we call mapping. We did a health mapping, and we already know where we are having high incidence of cases. And we come to the conclusion that those areas needed to be fished out. And this is where the health experts have given us an indication. That is why the president will be declaring a western area operation surge, whereby we are going into those cluster areas to guard against any resistance. That is why we are having the military and the police, so that we'll make sure we force people for compliance.
So you are going to use both the military and the police, and not the health workers?
Absolutely. They will be on standby, but the primacy here is not for us to enforce. It is more for people to comply very peacefully, because at the end of the day, it is going to be a win-win situation.
So the police and the military are not going to go into the houses, but are you going to use health professionals to go into those houses?
Absolutely. We have health professionals, we have ambulances on standby, so that even people who may present with certain sicknesses that are not Ebola, but are afraid to come out because they think when they go, they will be refused treatment in the hospitals, at least the ambulances will be able to ferry them immediately. Because for us as a government, we want to ensure that even though Ebola is a very contagious and a deadly virus, we still have other diseases that kill people. And we don't want to lose any more lives to such illnesses.
Sierra Leone's government spokesman Abdoulaye Birite was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Tanzania's Attorney General Frederick Werema has resigned from his position amid corruption accusations. He was alleged to be connected to the so-called Tegeta escrow account financial scandal, which has implicated senior officials accused of having fraudulently authorized payment of at least $122 million of public funds to a private company. In his resignation letter to President Jakaya Kikwete, Werema cited wrong interpretation to his advice on Tegeta escrow account as the main reason that he is stepping down from his position. Zito Kabwa is an opposition member of parliament who has been outspoken about corruption in Tanzania. He says the resignation alone is not enough.
I'm not satisfied on the resignation because what the people want, including myself, is action against the culprits. No action has been taken. Resignation is very, very light. And people would like to see the people who did not perform their duties well, who abused the office and facilitated the scandal, are taken to task. And the Attorney General hasn't been taken to task. He has been allowed to resign, which I don't think is the right thing to do.
A lot of people were involved, but what major role did he play to the point that he had to resign?
The Attorney General was at the center of the whole scandal because he is the one who gave the legal advice on how to handle the transaction. If he had conducted due diligence on that, definitely today we would not be speaking about the Tegeta escrow, but he did not do it. And that led to all others not doing their duty properly. And that's why we have the problem. So definitely he is at the center. He's the main culprit. He's supposed to be taken to task, to be brought to court for charges on abuse of office and everything. But nothing has been done. He has been allowed to resign.
President Kikwete said that he is going to give his word this week concerning the scandal. Do you think it's going to be the same thing as we saw in the scandal during the Richmond scandal, the EPA scandal, that nothing is taken but just changing the government?
I'm not very optimistic about this because if you read properly the reports from the Controller and Auditor General and the Public Accounts Committee, the same mistakes that happened during EPA happened during the Tegeta escrow. The same mistake. So, as I said before, I'm not very optimistic. We might still see the same kind of actions like resignations or long court cases and no really being taken. And the most important point that I can say here is the president has been credited for reforms in public finance accountability. He has ensured that the reports are produced on time from the Controller and Auditor General and are debated in Parliament. Before he got into power, the Auditor General reports were not being debated in Parliament for 5 years. He came into power, he made these reports public, and now it is normal that the reports are being presented in Parliament and debated and some actions are taken. But this Tegeta escrow scandal might erode all the gains that the president made over the last 10 years of his leadership.
Zito Kabwa is an opposition member of parliament in Tanzania. He was speaking from Dar es Salaam with Abu Shakur Abu of VOA Swahili Service. Kenya is host to numerous refugees who are seeking safe haven from conflicts. Immigrants from Somalia face challenges in their new lives in Kenya. Lenny Ruvaga has more for VOA News from the Kenyan capital ahead of International Migrants Day tomorrow, Thursday.
22-year-old Ahmed Shakie runs a clothing business in Isili, on the outskirts of the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. 4 years ago, he and two friends combined their resources to import clothes from Dubai and China and sell them at a profit. Their thriving enterprise draws in customers from all over the area. What's notable about their success is the fact that Shakie is a Somali refugee. He fled Mogadishu 7 years ago, but says he plans to return someday to rebuild his country.
Somalia, there's fighting always. There are terrorists, and it isn't a peaceful place. It is not a place to live. Now that we are here in Kenya, we live and work here. When Somalia becomes peaceful, we will go back home.
Isili, or small Mogadishu, is home to thousands of Somali migrants. Most who have attained legal status are either second or third generation Kenyan Somalis. Journalist Asaid Hassan fled the Hodan district in Somalia in 2006 at the height of the Al-Shabaab insurrection. Hassan worked at Horn Africa Radio, which was taken over by extremists. Today, Hassan works at Star FM, which is based in Isili. The radio station covers Kenya and parts of Somalia. He says he and other Somalis face similar challenges living in Kenya.
Number one is the ethnic profiling. Also, there is a lack of documentation. We have come here for so long, and we have a problem of getting the proper IDs in Kenya. And when we come across to the police, they ask us ID. Well, we don't have it.
2 weeks ago, the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, in collaboration with UNHCR, began the voluntary repatriation of 94 Somali refugees from Kenya, 23 years after conflict and famine drove them from their homeland. The process is supported by Somalia. As the world marks International Migrants Day on December 18th, IOM is looking towards its post-2015 development plan to ease the poverty of the migrants in Kenya. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Today's Wednesday, December 17th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe's sacked Vice President Joyce Mujuru could soon be fighting to hold on to her position as a member of parliament, which, according to the country's new constitution, she should have given up once she was named vice president. According to the state-controlled Herald newspaper, some ZANU-PF members opposed to Mrs. Mujuru have pushed to enforce the stipulation in the constitution. Constitutional lawyer Lovemore Manduku says there's legal provision for such an argument.
I think that is partly correct and partly wrong. What is correct is that if you are a vice president, the moment you become vice president, your seat as a member of parliament falls vacant. Just like if you become a speaker of parliament when you are an MP, your seat falls vacant. If you become the president of the Senate when you are also a member of parliament, your seat becomes vacant. So in this case, Vice President Mujuru's seat became vacant when she became vice president. It doesn't matter that she was still regarded as an MP because the constitution was clear on that. But what is not correct is that she can no longer stand. What the constitution says is if you want to stand as an MP when you are a former vice president who is receiving a pension, you must then give up your pension. You must then stop receiving a pension the moment you win your election as a member of parliament. So she can stand as an MP. If she wins, before she takes oath as an MP, she must renounce her pension. She must give away her pension and then receive the salary of an MP. But if she doesn't renounce, then she will not be qualified to become an MP.
Is the constitution clear if she argues that the constitution will be effective after 10 years, as is the case with the running mate?
She will have a good argument, but it will depend on how the constitutional court will decide it. The reason why I'm saying she'll have a good argument is that there is confusion in the current constitution. It has so many confusing provisions because there are two types of vice presidents there. The first type of vice president is a vice president who is elected at the same time with the president, who is called a running mate. This vice president will become vice president 10 years from last year, in 2023, if the constitution is still like that. It may be amended before that. Then the second vice president is the vice president who is currently there, who is appointed and dismissed by the president. So it is possible for a person to argue that in sections that refer to the pension for the vice president, it is referring to a vice president who will become vice president in 2023. If that is the case, then yeah, if the court accepts that, she might get a good argument.
But can she contest this in court?
Yeah, she can contest it in court. She must try it if she wants to try it. If she finds that it is disadvantaging her, if she finds that the interpretation we are currently giving is against what she wants, she must try and take it to a court. Only a court will give a final decision. I must tell the listeners that law is not something that is like mathematics, where 1 + 1 = 2. In law, it is always dependent on who is interpreting the provision.
Zimbabwe constitutional lawyer Lovemore Manduku was speaking with Jonga Kantemiri of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Former U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Susan Page has been reflecting on her days in South Sudan in light of Monday's one-year anniversary of that country's conflict. Ambassador Page tells John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program that it has been difficult to watch the conflict unfold over the past year.
It really, really just seemed so tragic that a people that had fought so long and so hard, you know, from 1955, really before that even, but let's say from the original kind of Anyanya One, the Torit Rebellion in 1955, the creation of the SPLM, SPLA, or SPLA, SPLM, really, and their long struggle for self-determination, for the recognition of their dignity. And to then have their own sovereign nation and to not be able to get away from the tragic history of a fighting between themselves. It was really sad, but I knew that no matter how sad I felt, it could only be 20 times worse for South Sudanese who had such high hopes for themselves.
You stay in Juba, of course, with your diplomatic work. You must have reached out to a lot of South Sudanese and made friends. Some very close friends. What were they telling you?
These stories were really hard to see that people who previously had crossed over between ethnic lines, there was nothing wrong with people had intermarried. There was a lot of that. But as we saw even in the conflict in Jonglei State the year before with David Yao Yao and others, we know that these are fragile and in some cases somewhat artificial divisions. But this conflict has really separated people, where some friends would say that they would reach out and talk to their New Air friends, Dinka friends, Shuluk friends, and others, and some of them would say, don't call me again. Please don't, I don't want to talk to you again. Or whose efforts to take people to shelter were rebuffed because they thought that there might have been ulterior motives. That was really sad. That was really quite tragic.
That was Susan Page, former U.S. ambassador to South Sudan. She was speaking to John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Does seeing yourself as a different race or age change your biases and stereotypes? An experiment using computers and other visual manipulations allows subjects to see themselves as someone from a different group. Researchers found that among white subjects, their unconscious biases against black people and children were reduced using virtual body swapping. Viewers Jessica Berman tells us about the effect of this virtual body swapping.
Researchers made people think they had a different body to see if their unconscious biases towards someone of a different race, age, or sex also changed. In a paper published in the journal Trends in Cognitive Sciences, investigators describe how they use computerized virtual reality and, in other experiments, a prosthetic arm trick to make subjects think they inhabited the body of someone from a different racial or age group. The so-called rubber hand illusion involves the participant putting their hand behind a screen while a rubber hand of a different color is on the table in front of them. When the rubber hand is stroked at exactly the same time their own unseen hand is, they feel as if the prosthesis is part of their body. According to Manos Sakiris, a psychology professor at Royal Holloway University of London, it's actually pretty easy to trick the brain into thinking it inhabits the body of another person.
So, for example, white participants to embody a black body, or an adult to suddenly become a child. So we use this kind of virtual reality techniques to create illusions of embodiment so that you start feeling as if you have black skin, or that your body size is smaller than it is.
Sakiris and an international team of researchers wanted to see whether virtually swapping bodies like that could alter someone's deeply ingrained feelings and stereotypes of different social groups. They wanted to know if people's feelings change in a perceptible way, if they felt ownership of the transformed individual they saw before them. Sakura says they used a psychology tool called an implicit association task to see whether the subjects attached fewer negative images and concepts to someone of a different group after the experiment.
What we found is that as a result of this change in embodiment, of becoming someone else, people's implicit threshold bias changes. They become less negatively biased against out-groups. And this is a very interesting finding because it goes beyond any kind of explicit views that people may have about different groups.
Sakura says the finding was consistent over several studies that use different virtual body swapping techniques.
If you change people's self-representation, you change the way they stereotype and the way they relate to others.
Sakiris notes the controversy in the United States over policing involving racial stereotypes in predominantly African-American communities. He says it may be possible from his work to develop exercises to help sensitize police officers to the citizens they interact with. The researchers are doing high-tech imaging studies to see how the brain changes when someone identifies with another individual through virtual body swapping, as well as how long the effects last. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Equatorial Guinea's Malabo Kings dismissed Mayotte Island's Mtapere 65-53 as Angola's Libolo pipped Egypt's Sporting Alexandria 63-62 at the African Men's Basketball Club Championships in the Tunisian capital Tunis on Tuesday. The Democratic Republic of Congo's Mazembe edged Nigeria's Mark Mentos 69-66. Angola's defending champions Primero de Agosto outplayed Ivory Coast's Abidjan Basketball Club 80-63, while in an all-Tunisian encounter, ES Rades edged US Monastir 85-80. Turning to football, goals scored by Sergio Ramos, Karim Benzema, Gareth Bale, and Francisco Suarez propelled Spain's Real Madrid to a 4-0 triumph over Mexico's Cruz Azul in the first semi-final at the FIFA Club World Cup in Marrakech, Morocco on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, New Zealand's Auckland City challenged Argentina's San Lorenzo in the other semi-final, while Algeria's Entente Setif faced Australia's Western Sydney Wanderers in the fifth place playoff. In Zambia, the national team coach, Ona Janza, looks set to sign a long-term contract, the Football Association of Zambia president Kalusha Bwalya told the Lusaka media. Bwalya says that guiding Zambia's Chipolopolo to qualify for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations proves coach Janza deserves to have his status elevated from a caretaker coach to a full-time national team coach. Bwalya assures coach Janza of full support as he prepares Chipolopolo for the Nations Cup campaign in Equatorial Guinea next month. Staying in Lusaka, communications network service provider MTN has increased its sponsorship for Zambia's national team and domestic Super League from $450,000 to $1.5 million. Zambia's MTN chief executive, Abdul Ismail, says Zambia's improved standard of football has attracted their increased corporate sponsorship. Finally, hosts Madagascar beat Seychelles twice with identical scorelines of 8-3 in friendly beach football action played in Mahajane. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Authorities in Sierra Leone will today, Wednesday, conduct house-to-house searches around the capital, Freetown, to look for hidden Ebola patients. That's it for this Wednesday, December 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcast. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com. Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.